This is Floss Weekly. I'm Doc Searles. I'll be joined this week by Simon Phipps, my co-host, and Salona Bonewald, our guest. She has a new gig with IEEE SA Open, and that's coming up next. Floss Weekly is brought to you from LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 584, recorded Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. IEEE SA Open. Good morning or good day, wherever you are. Welcome to Floss Weekly. I'm Doc Searles, and I am joined this week by Simon Phipps, the famous Simon Phipps. So, Simon, where are you?
I am once again in my Unabomber cabin at the edge of the woods, and I've been sitting down here. It's actually got really hot here in the UK. It's up, you know, over, I think you're still using old money over there, aren't you? It's up over 70. So, you know, we're sweltering here.
Over 70. You mean over 20 in local parlance. It was 100 degrees, which is like, what, 40 or something in Siberia a couple days ago?
I've been trying to avoid going there. Honestly, I mean, it's been on the travel itinerary, but there's never been a conference there. So,
well, you've gotten rid of your permafrost back when the Druids were on the case, I think. We are also joined this week by with Salona Bonewald, who's new at the IEEE, and I know you know her, and so. Before we jump to welcoming her, any thoughts in advance?
Salona's in a great new job. You know, she was previously working on blockchain at Linux Foundation, and this new role I think is a great role that brings together all of her past experiences in community organizing and in technology. And I think she's going to do a great job. And I'm hoping that she's going to, during our discussion, help me continue to believe that.
Yeah, that's great. So with no further delay, let's bring Salona in and begin to interrogate her. you'll be impressed by her background as well as by her, because I think she has a champion background. I just have clutter, you know, and which is, you know, the way that works.
Clutter is great. I like clutter.
I actually started using this last week with some tapes, and I hate to say it failed. And it failed not because of itself. I think it failed because the tapes themselves are so warped that they couldn't thread right, and they keep wandering off the capstan. But have we lost or failed to keep Salona here?
No, she's there. I can hear her dulcet tones.
Okay, so there she is.
There we go.
Wonderful. Yay. Welcome, Salona. This is great. I mean, we've known each other for a long time. It is great to, it's great to see you. So, last I saw you, or maybe two times ago, you were still with the Hyperledger Foundation at the Linux Foundation, and now you've jumped over to the IEEE, and I'm just learning about the IEEE because I went and started a work group there, and I had no idea stick that somewhere later. Give us the high level on what brought you there and what you're hoping to do there, and then we can start to break it down.
Sure. So the IEEE is a huge organization. It's like 420,000 members around the world. And, you know, they host, like, normally, you know, pre-COVID, 4,000 events a year. And they do standards, and they do publishing, and they do all of these amazing things. But one of the things they hadn't embarked on yet was open source. And so I started conversations with Josh Gay, who works there. Simon probably knows him from OSI. about the platform that they were wanting to create and how they were wanting to create it. And so I kind of like was talking with Josh about, oh, this would be good, that would be good, this would be good. And then they were ready to launch it. And Josh said, hey, do you want to come be the ED? And I was just like, oh, wow. And I was like, yeah, I'm very interested in doing it. Because one of the things that, you know, I've been involved in open source since 2004. You know, when we started doing the whole open data, open government stuff and things of that nature. And I think that's back when you and I met. Doc was like, I think I was talking at Berkman about a lot of those different aspects. And when I was sitting there and thinking about IEEE, it was kind of like, oh, right, standards, you know, oh, taking all these things to the next level. And then when I was previously at PayPal for 3 years, I did InnerSource with Denise Cooper. And I learned a lot about where I believed open source needed to go next to help expand it and bring it to that next maturity level. And so that's why I was like, oh, yeah, IEEE with standards, they're going to like what I have to say in those processes that I want to introduce. So that's why I took the job.
So a couple of things. First of all, I believe we met at South By. Back in the Pleistocene, you know, back when it wasn't that well attended and you could just walk into that barbecue place. And in fact, I'm pretty, I don't know if the photo that's on your homepage is one that I took or not, but some of you may not know, I'm like a peripatetic photographer and I shoot the heck out of everybody. So I got some ones of you back then. But I do remember the Berkman thing. It's interesting to me that most of the conversation about open source has been about licensing. And it's sort of like you talk open source, you talk licenses, not standards so much. In fact, it's more like there's licenses are over here, standards are over here. And the big standards organizations have often been about, there have been places where patents get stamped and approved and then negotiations take place and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm wondering about how is it that the IEEE started to get hip toward open source? You sort of touched on it there, but and where you want to take it, because I mean, you've got a pretty important job there, I think, in moving not just the open source conversation, but the open source procedures to standards organization to the possibly the most consequential standards body in the world.
So the standards, one of the things that I found after joining this, my LinkedIn got flooded, and it was from a bunch of my friends who were working at SSOs and SDOs, because a lot of them were also all thinking in this direction too. And they're just like, oh my God, Selena, where are you going to take this? We want to engage in the conversation on this. And I think it has a lot to do with the collateral that people need and all the other different pieces that happen with standards. Because if you sit there and think about it in a rough way, not in a formalized way, APIs become standards. You know, all these other things become standards. And so it's like, how do we make sure that we can do all the things that we need to do? And that was one thing that was really important to me, both at PayPal with doing the orchestration tool of deploying code to production and doing CI/CD and all of those different things is, you know, in a way that's almost a standard, right? Because if you break paypal.com, you're in a lot of trouble. And so you have to figure out what that is. And then at Hyperledger, you know, they take it to the next level in regards to open source, where they're really focused on bringing things to production level quality. And they spend a lot of money on that, you know, doing security audits, doing licensing audits, doing all of those different things to make sure that what they create is as safe as possible for corporate America to be able to implement it safely and with trust. And so when it came over to IEEE, it's like, what does IEEE have a lot of? It's got a lot of trust. And so it's like, okay, I think I can take this to the next level. And they have such a huge humanitarian bent. And that was like one of the things that always pained me in open source is watching the humanitarian projects often flounder because they didn't have the ability to be sustainable, while the ones that were a little bit more corporate. And as we know, you know, we've seen the stats, right, for a lot of open source now, more and more developers being paid to work on open source. And so how do we integrate those two in a trustworthy way and in an ethical way?
So I'm doing quite a bit of work at the moment at a standards body called OASIS. and a certain amount of work at a standards body called ETSI. And doing that work, it becomes pretty obvious that there are a bunch of people who are very afraid of open source in the world of standards. Is that also true at IEEE? Because my instinctive feel is that IEEE has got a lot of people in it who are less bound up with getting royalties from patents and much more concerned about compatibility. So it's do you think that what people call the FRAND wars is a problem that you've got to face while you're at IEEE doing open source?
So IEEE isn't forcing anyone to be open source. So what we are getting are those groups that are sitting there going, I really worry about compatibility, not about making that money off of those patents. And in fact, some of the different groups that have been coming to me that we haven't quite negotiated everything on, were very much so focused on the affiliation model and making sure that there was no undue influence. There was no one corporation controlling it all, things of that nature. So I think that we're automatically attracting a lot of those. I do see where a lot of people are worried about what's going to happen in regards to the business models for these things. And so that's one reason why things aren't forced, but there are a lot that are already wanting to come over to work towards that.
Right. And so, the way that Oasis won this battle when they were dealing with intellectual property and patents was by offering being open source friendly as an option rather than as a requirement. And,
exactly.
What they found was that everybody chose the open option. And out of hundreds of standards they've done, they've only got about two that use the we want to charge royalties option. So is that the sort of direction that you're thinking that you're going to take here? And I actually have a secondary to that, which is we're in a discussion at ETSI at the moment about open source, and they're adamant that open source doesn't mean code going into specifications, and that open source is going to be this thing over here, and that standards are going to be this thing over here, and they're somehow going to be joined by a very tightly controlled pipe. So is that the world that you're thinking of in what you're doing?
So, first of all, we are doing the same as the Oasis, where it's completely optional. And in fact, we're right at the baby stages right now. Like, we've just launched, we're just getting everything together. And we've already piloted several standards through, two of which that have been created. And there's a huge amount of variability. Sometimes it's code, sometimes it's data. Sometimes it's the frameworking tools. Sometimes another group's coming in that wants it to be the testing tools for the compliance aspects. It's highly variable. So, and we're not limiting them on that. But it is tough because we've got to go figure out what are all those processes. And that's one reason why it was really important that we called it SA Open, not SA Open Source, is because we're getting hardware, we're getting open hardware, we're getting open data, we're getting open standards. We're getting a lot of different types of open. And one of the things that I did want to maybe bring up here and at large is a conversation about what is open, going even beyond open source and OSI, but like what makes something qualify as that? It's the kind
I can answer that one to a certain degree because I'm thinking about that quite a lot at the moment. And the answer to that is that it's open when you haven't got to go ask. You haven't got to go negotiate for the right to proceed. That's how you know that something is open.
Well, I am still having people negotiate, right? Like, we've already done our maintainer's manual. And for that, we do make sure that we have a very open policy for features being added. And what does that look like? So, because sometimes in open source, I think we've all seen it, where the maintainers might be a chokehold of a certain company, and the certain company dictates that certain features aren't crucial or they don't want them or things of that nature. And they doesn't feel as open as maybe it should be.
Well, there's definitely spin to do on it in that dimension. But at the top level, the thing I'm having to define this for a report that I'm working on for the European Commission at the moment. And the word open, I think, intrinsically means that the work product is usable without further negotiation. And so that's what links together open data, open source, open hardware. If to use the work product, I've got to go negotiate with anybody, then it's not open.
And then
you're completely right that then at the community level, there are other ways of being a gatekeeper than putting patent royalties on things. And you've got to guard against those as well. But I think it would be great to have a conversation about that. Did you know that OSI has got a conference coming up called State of the Source, where that would be a great topic to discuss?
Oh, sure. I'm down. When is it?
I will advertise it towards the end of the show.
Awesome. Sounds great.
It'll be this afternoon.
Yeah. So I think actually Simon, did we meet in 04 when I came to OSCON and I sat in on the OSI meeting?
I'm not sure whether it was actually there. It might have been at South by Southwest as well, because I came to a party at your house. And I think that might have been around South by Southwest time, but it was around 2004 kind of time. Yeah. So it's been a long time, and we both know where the bodies are buried in each other's yards.
Well, my parties at South by Southwest were a bit infamous back then. So
I didn't see anyone digging in any corners. So it's
yeah. It's so people know you're in Austin. I mean, I totally associate South by with you. I mean, it's like, it's not South by unless you're around there. I'm wondering, my entire acquaintance with the IEEE has been as part in a working group that I started actually. And I'm not competent to run, so we have a different chairman, which is good. But I'm wondering how much of the IEEE is the working group process, and how is that going to work with, I mean, are there examples of things that are already happening around open source and working groups, or is the whole process or set of processes entirely other than that?
I think we're getting a lot of it.
On my part. Yeah.
No. It's all good. No, we're figuring it out. And that's one of the things that's interesting for doing this platform is like the very first push that I'm doing is I'm figuring out what the meta level of governance is going to be, because this is open to everyone. Okay. Everyone. But I need to get all my IEEE people on there too. And we have like 47 different societies and all these different regionals, and, you know, it's 420,000 people around the world. So how do I create something that's useful for them? And so the very first thing that I'm doing is actually I'm running these workshops on how to create a community advisory group, how to create a marketing advisory group, and how to create a technical advisory group. I don't use the word committees with IEEE because it's a loaded term. And I'm hoping to be able to do the whole election process in a year or two after I have the tooling in place where I can correctly monitor and manage who's done a contribution so that they can vote and things of that nature. But we're actually figuring that out. And then we're going to be onboarding 8 different societies within IEEE onto the platform itself, saying, okay, here's the structures that we're looking for doing and creating some of that. And with the working groups on the standards, we've kind of already got some of that in place, but we haven't ironed it out as much as we would like to. But we are looking at integrating the standards tool that IEEE has with GitLab so that you can actually track both the standards progress with the open sources progress. So you can just like go, okay, the standard is here. The open source project is over here. But they're actually different. They're two different processes so that we can have open source stuff that isn't a standard. We can have just standards, and then we can have standards who decide they want to become open source, or open source that decides they become a standard. So we're trying to keep all of that fluid between the two different groups.
That's what jumps into my mind is like, okay, you're dealing with physics and chemistry and mechanics, and they all kind of do work together. We have all of those, but these are different disciplines doing different things. I mean, that sounds like, it isn't so much herding cats as much as creating a different zoo or something where these things are open to each other, but it's not necessarily all the same thing.
I'm expecting a culture shock when all the standards people meet all the open source people. And that's why the very first thing that I'm working on is an online facilitator's guide.
Oh, wow.
So that everybody doesn't, you know, explode too much, because it's kind of funny. I'm really enjoying being at the IEEE because I enjoy process. You know, at my heart, I'm still a large scale, you know, database architect. You know, that's what I did all throughout the 90s and the early 2000s is I architected large scale systems. And, you know, and then at PayPal helping deploy things to production and CI/CD and, you know, how do we get all these things orchestrated? How do we do open planning and make sure that everyone's more coordinated and things of that nature? And so I really love doing that. And over here, I feel like I get to be the crazy woman with purple hair. And so I'm kind of like introducing them to the open source community and its, you know, idiosyncrasies. So, and trying to get the processes in place so that everyone can work well together.
So we get our initialism straight. You're running IEEE SA open, all uppercase. Unpack the SA for me, because it's a standards association, or is it a society? Or
oh, no. So there's more than that. So the standards organization is a part of the IEEE itself. So there's also the publishing arm. There's like the academic arm. There's all the other different meetings arms. There's a lot of things that IEEE does. and so it's kind of one of those things where, in regards to the architecture, at first, you know, there was a bit of a discussion as to where should this go? Should it go directly under IEEE or should it go elsewhere? And I believe that they made the right decision in regards to doing IEEE and then standards and then open, because that group has a lot of the processes already in place that I would like to have for, like I said, raising that maturity level. And there's also this really direct correlation, but we're opening it up to all of IEEE. So the like I was talking, for example, with the Humanitarian Activities Committee, which is thousands of people. OK, it's huge. And they've got open source stuff going on all over the place. And so when I was talking to the lead of it, he was like, oh, Salona, it would be so nice to centralize this and to know where everything is and be able to do that. I said, yes. And we're also starting. It's not immediate, but we're working on creating a sponsorship fund. So that when projects reach a certain maturity level, we can sit there and go, oh, okay, you need to spend some more money on CI/CD. You need some test nets. You need some security audits. You need any of these things it takes to bring yourselves up to production level. Let's give you that. Because like I watch, you know, I get so sad sometimes when I go to GitHub and I look things up and it's like so much abandonware. And not only that, but having been a part of some of those projects, it's like, oh, there's all these different things that we screw up on. And I'm trying to actually address all of those, not just the code quality issue, but also like the community issue, the legal issue, the marketing issue, you know, even the technical issues in regards to governance. And so I'm doing something really huge in regards to that, where I'm trying to address all of those levels.
So, wow. Okay. So there's a lot to unpack there. Let's start with you've been talking about maturity level. What does that mean exactly? Is this evolution? Is it people growing up? Is it these disparate organizations within the IEEE discovering how the others are doing open source and centralizing it with you, or all the above, or none of that?
It's actually from the project manager perspective or the business perspective, which is where you're trying to define your processes as you're going up to the point where, you know, at the very top of it, everyone's like, yeah, okay, of course, this is how we do everything. And so it's more along those lines. And so that's why it's like talking about, you know, mature open source projects normally have something like a technical steering committee or a community steering committee or something along those lines. And really mature ones have things like a marketing steering committee. And so that's why we're starting off with like creating those guidelines for all the incoming projects as to, oh, if you get to this level, here's some guidance and here's a whole group over at IEEE that's specializing on advising you in that and creating a guidebook to help you. And so that's why I created those four different advisory groups, is to sit there and say, okay, you know, we're creating a group of specialists in all of this to sit there and help you sit there and see it. At the same time, we are drinking our own wine and we're open sourcing it, of course. We may be doing a best practices standards in regards to it. I hope to, in the next 2-3 years, do badging for it, kind of like the CII. And then so that we can actually have these different maturity levels. And so that's why I say the maturity levels, is because it's getting to where, you know, everybody kind of knows the basic processes that should be in place going forward, so that they can grow, you know. So it goes past just, you know, the one person show, or, you know, the five people, and can grow to become something that's really ready and sustainable.
It seems to me like you've taken on a job that is potentially infinitely large. So I'm wondering how you can take on more than you can eschew. I mean, or how can you keep from taking on more than you can eschew or scrape off on somebody else? And you mm-hmm. know, do you have the budget or the personnel for that? And just wondering how you can contain something that is potentially is far ranging.
That was why I went at IEEE, is because they do have an amazing group of volunteers. IEEE's budget, you know, is decided by the volunteers, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. And they're a true 501c3. They, you know, they very much so focus on humanitarian events. Their heart is completely where I need it to be, ethically speaking, in regards to this. And so when it comes to creating those kind of processes, they really know this and they're really into it. And so I have a lot of people who are very willing to nerd out with me on that meta level because they've already been doing it. So it's kind of like, okay, so we go through and we start meta. And we start sitting there going, what does a good community look like? What does, you know, a good marketing, you know, what's the kind of marketing that open source needs to do? Which is honestly one of the things I see failing the most often. And then also the technical aspects of that. And so, and then the other thing that's interesting is by the fact that we are drinking our own wine, we're doing this all in GitLab. We're submitting all of the changes that we make back to GitLab. And so we have a lot of groups that are coming in and saying, hey, we want to work with you on this. And I'm talking other really large groups of people too. So with the amazing reputation that IEEE has for doing patterns and process and helping outline that, I've got other really big groups coming in and they've got huge resources.
So just to sum up what your IEEE Open activity is, it sounds like it's a best practices guide and a platform. Is that true, or yes. Is there more to it?
Yep, that's a huge part of it. And okay. I'm so hoping a little bit later, funding model.
All right, that would be good. Yeah, that's kind of trendy at the moment. Yeah, I, at the end of the show, I'll be asking people to sponsor me on Patreon and on GitHub sponsors. So tell me about the platform. You mentioned GitHub.
GitLab.
You mentioned GitLab, not GitLab. GitHub.
Yeah.
So you're hosting your own platform. How far is that going to go? Are you going to be offering LibreOffice online? Are you going to be offering email?
So IEEE already does email for members, so I don't think we'll be stepping on that. What we will be doing is it will be right now it's GitLab and Mattermost. And then it's a big focus on the code aspects. So also, we're actually creating the GitLab platform so that we can run multiple platforms. And so there's even a talk of doing an open EDU platform that's on GitLab that all contributes back into GitLab and they all go across the board. So, and this is like me getting to go back to my large scale systems architecture roots. For example, on, you know, talking to GitLab, I was like, well, do you know what would be really cool is instead of the normal pull request piece where it's just a maintainer accepts it, I'm like, what if we had balloting? Yeah. You know, because I know we've all had problems doing open source governance where we're sitting there and we're going through the document line item by line item. And it's a real pain to do all the voting and all the discussions and tracking all of that. And I'm just like, well, instead of doing it in a Google Doc, why don't we do it code-like? And have voting on it and have commentary on the side of it and do all of that. And everyone was like, ooh.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of different groups who want that, including GitLab itself. GitLab was like, oh, that would be so ridiculously useful for any open source community trying to do their governance models.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and looking at it from those kind of perspectives. So, right. Yeah, so at the first, so it's just who's GitLab paying for all and Spatterbus.
Because, I mean, Oasis charges people a metric, large container full of money to be a member.
So we're working on our
paying open, for all the tools.
Yeah, so we're working right now I'm working on the open venture business models at the moment. And so we have the stuff that's automatically free. And then we have the stuff that people can help sponsor. And then we're also doing, like I said, the sponsorship of the other entities and what that looks like. So the cool thing about it is because everything's open source, we target everything as contributing back into the overall platform. So right. We may sponsor certain things getting written, but then everyone benefits from it.
Right. So now I do want to go a bit further in a minute on the project aspect. I'm still quite interested in the platform, though. It sounds like you've got a file store repository. You've got a Slack equivalent in there in Mattermost. I feel that the free and open source software community desperately needs a fully free and open source platform for people to collaborate on. And Free Software Foundation has just started including Jitsi as a member benefit for their members. Do you think that IEEE could be the savior that gives us a platform of GitLab and Mattermost and LibreOffice Online and Matrix Riot and all the tools that let you do all the things developers need without needing to become anybody's rent payer?
I am hoping. I don't know exactly how far we're going to go on the different technological support, but we are doing a lot of things already internally in GitLab. Like we're setting up the project management. We're asking that the documentation either be done on the wiki or in a repo itself so that we can start to add these additional features so that we don't always need the documentation aspects as much. If you go and look at the marketing advisory committee, we are doing things to help with the centralization of marketing collateral in regards to things like posting copies of slides, getting social media toolkits, you know, things of that nature. So on the workshops, we are using BigBlueButton. And mm-hmm. My consulting group, LeadingBit, is actually going to be doing some contributions back to the BigBlueButton group in regards to some of the stuff that we're doing to help that scale. So that we can have, you know, great big workshops of 300 people working on things together.
And that's definitely the thing we need. You know, I'm already seeing people using BigBlueButton or Jitsi for pretty large activities. There is no reason per se why you have to go to a proprietary tool to do it.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of know-how and production DevOps capability to actually make it work.
Yeah, I'm kind of spoiled because of my husband. Who does cloud. And so he's helping me out with the BigBlueButton stuff. And then he also has a group of friends at AWS who are also helping us out. So we're definitely going in that direction. And like I said, I'm very, very spoiled. So
Right. We're very happy for you to share your spoiling with us.
Exactly.
It's very good. So how do I get to be one of these projects? You know, can I? I've got some friends who are working on an IPv6 library system to make IPv6 broadcast available to the whole internet easily. Could they host their project at IEEE, or have you got to be some big wig or big budget company to start something there?
Anybody can do it. It doesn't have to be a big wig. The only thing is like right now I'm juggling the money, right? In regards to how many features I can give you versus how much money I have. And, because we're nascent, but I'm hoping that in the next year to land some very big ones so that I don't even have to worry about that anymore. you know, in regards to providing basic, you know, cloud support for CI/CD and testnets. so anybody can come and create a project, and there's some random ones that have already come on board where I'm like, whoa, I don't know exactly what this is, and neither does Josh. And we're like, okay, cool. I'm sure after this, you know, broadcast, that will happen some more because I purposely haven't been pushing it a lot because I wanted to do all of the meta level stuff first. And so one of my big asks here is all of these open source people and experts to come and help us create these meta materials. And like I said, if they do become best practices standards, it becomes a way to get your name on a standard as well. And so that's one of the things that we're doing first, is kind of getting a lot of those processes into place so that we know what that looks like going forward. Because it is, you know, complicated. Like I said, with the standards, it's like there's a lot of back and forth that happens. There's a lot of automation that needs to be done. So for right now, we're actually creating the, there's a special form if you want to become an official IEEE project, which means that you get the IEEE branding and yada, yada, yada. And so we're doing that. Anyone can come and join as an unofficial IEEE project. And then there's yet another group of things that you need to do if you're wanting to become a standard. And that's all completely controlled by the standards committees.
So I have a question about
what I was talking about.
And I have a question about what can't be done. Every organization, no matter what kind they are, and actually for every person to some degree, comes from somewhere. Like, the one thing you can't change is where you're from. You know, I'm from New Jersey, so I can't change that. I'm like that guy. You know, there's a and the IEEE stands for Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, and it was formed out of electrical engineers and radio engineers in 1963. And so there are legacies here, and I'm wondering about this. There's a trick to being able to recognize the things that will never change, and because they can't, and the things that are really good at that we've forgotten about what the legacy is that possibly can be changed. And so I'm wondering if how you're looking at that. Are there any places you just don't go, or you go because you know you really have to change that?
So first, IEEE is way older. Tesla was part of the founding of it. Yeah. And then they had a name change, and then they they started doing standards and things of that nature. But it was actually formed a long time ago, and they have kind of a history in regards to that. And I think that lends a lot to the humanitarian bent, which helps a lot in regards to some of the normal things that would cause conflicts in the open source world. Because of, you know, being so conscious of affiliation issues, you know, having a bunch of policies and procedures in place in regards to the standards, things of that nature, and being very cautious about that and being very strict about it. Because, you know, IEEE is cited in legislation, and that's a huge burden, right, to make sure that you keep up that level of quality and you do not lose that level of trust. So when it comes to things that I think will be difficult is when people, you know, like already like with code, for example, with standards, people are used to things not changing. And they're just like, no, it just doesn't change. It's like, well, that can't happen with code. There will be security updates. There will be things of that nature. You know, how do we address that? In standards, you can do that with slightly fuzzier legal language in regards to, you know, meeting the requirements of, or, you know, the kind of due process kinds of things, but you can't do that with code. And so it becomes a little bit more complex as to what that looks like. And there's a lot of discussions taking place on that piece as to, is it the code? Is it pointing to the repository where we're already watching that? How do we make sure that we can support something for the 10 years that we commit to in regards to some of those standards? And do that, you know, fiscally, right? Because that could become a huge burden. And then I think that there are some pieces that I don't think will come over to open source when it comes to the patent or the proprietary. That just won't be there. There are some open hardware that really do want to make sure that they can be as open as possible. And then there's others that don't. And for them, it's not going to be as useful to come over to the open source. Now, they might want to come over and open source their tool set, but that doesn't necessarily mean all of their stuff will be open.
That's interesting, especially your point about ideally unchanging nature of a standard. You want a standard to be, it's like gravity. That doesn't change. It's right here. We're not going to, you know, There's one standard for gravity. It's 1x. Maybe some small anomalies here and there, but it's pretty constant. But the code does change constantly. And part of what I think is going on here, this is just my own projection on everything, is that we're going through a digital transition. We are going from the electrical age and even the electronics age, which is maybe to some degree digital, to an all digital, and watch everything get absorbed into the digital world, which is boundlessly improvisational. You know, there's a lot of, you know, it's a lot like jazz. You know, you're bending the notes. You know, we have 16 notes on the scale here. It's a chromatic scale, but actually within that is an infinite range of possibilities. And many years ago, some of us came up with not a definition of open source, behind open source is we called NEA. Nobody owns it, everybody can use it, and anyone can improve it. And mm-hmm. is that possible with standards? And I think it is, but it's a tall order for you.
It is a tall order. Sometimes I do feel like the tools themselves can hold people back in regards to doing things in doing things in a Word doc versus doing things on GitLab, I think can cause a change. I don't know exactly when that change would occur, but I'm hoping to first illustrate that with open source to the standards groups, and then they can figure out where those compromises can be made between the two. Because there are different things being made in regards to like the data set. Sitting there saying, no, it needs to correspond to these metrics. Because like with hardware, for example, we've seen this huge expansion, right, with 3D printing, where it's kind of like, woohoo! And now people are trying to 3D print respirators to deal with COVID-19. You know, that's a standards nightmare, right? It's like wonderful, and IEEE is involved in trying to help and trying to figure out how to do all of that to make sure that everything is safe. But it ain't easy. You know, it's going to take a lot to figure out where that is and how to get there. And that's one reason why I think they're so interested in regards to doing that is because of the differences that we're starting to see in regards to open hardware. Think back in the day with ARM, right? ARM didn't actually make the chips, right? They sold the designs for the chips. And once you start to get to those different levels of abstraction, you start to go, oh, we need to figure out how do we make it safe at each of those different steps. And I think that's part of the challenge that's going to happen with open in general.
So what do you think is the link between the things that are going to be happening in your area and the things that are happening in the standards association area? Because, I mean, the standardization process is a well-understood thing with a well-understood process and a well-understood IP space. It sounds like it's possible for things that would never have any relationship to standards to fit into IEEE Open. Yes. And that indeed is one of the things that some of the other standards bodies are worried about with open source, is that they'll start doing open and a whole load of distracting, unrelated things will flood the area. Is that something you worry about, or is there going to be a link between standards and open in your world?
I'm hoping we'll have a graduation process, so that when things do come in that, you know, just like we were talking about interoperability, compatibility, APIs, versioning, things of that nature, that we can start, you know, both OASIS and IEEE kind of have a reputation of going, okay, how do we fit this into a standards process? You know, do we make this like a best practices standard, or do we make this other type of standard, or what's that process going to look like? And I think we can move forward by looking at it from that perspective. So there will be different processes that I think just come into play in regards to it, where I think the standards process I don't know for sure, but I assume as it's evolved, it will continue to evolve.
Right. So in a way, what you're doing at IEEE Open is you're providing a way of standardizing project progress rather than of implementing the open standards that are coming out of the IEEE SA side of the activity.
Both. So we're definitely trying to do the standardization of the process, and some of the standards themselves are using it for that purpose as well.
Right, right. So do you have some examples of some of the projects that are going on there? Maybe you could illustrate something where a standard has got a project going and something else that is unrelated to standards.
I don't have that on hand, but I can get that to you because I'm really bad about memorizing all the numbers. That's kind of been more of Joshua Gay's thing. So he knows exactly where each of those projects are, where they are. You know, like we've had two of them complete now where they came in as open source and open standards, and they've already become standards. So it's been a 2-year process that Josh has been working on for doing all of that. And then we're also talking with some other standards that already exist that evidently have stuff in open source that aren't part of the standard, but are their resources. And so they want to bring those over as well. So there's kind of a lot going in there, but it's highly variable too. Like I said, it's very, very cool.
How do you host open hardware and, I would love to see some open silicon going on. I worked on OpenSpark at Sun back in the mid 2000s. How are you going to host those sorts of projects rather than things that are completely soft, like specifications or software?
So right now, there's actually one that's going through that is about the open design spec standards for the chips. And I'll have to get you the link to that one. But that one exists. So there's a group that's sitting there going, I want to actually standard, you know, I guess more meta than that. First, let's talk about what the actual standards of that documentation looks like. And the design software and things of that nature. And then going into how do we actually incorporate that into something like GitLab, where we're, you know, I think some of them have been posting some of their graphical diagrams. So doing things of that nature is like one step where now they have an open place to put it where they didn't have previously other than like, you know, putting in a document was kind of awkward and doesn't really scale well. So that's what they're looking at going forward is actually for the design of the chips in the first place.
Right. That's all very interesting stuff. So yeah, IEEE has a lot of liaison. IEEE has a bunch of liaisons with other standards organizations and relationships around particular specifications. Do you see IEEE Open being used as a place where, for example, let's say Etsy entirely fails to work out an open source strategy, could they use their liaison status with you to host an open source project related to an Etsy standard there?
Most definitely. And I'm getting MOUs worked up for a number of different SOs and SDOs that want to do exactly that. The thing that we're talking about doing is because of the fact that we are drinking our own wine in regards to GitLab, we can, and how we're doing the whole containerization, the CI/CD aspects, all of that, they can actually create their entire own platform. And if they decided that they didn't like us, they could move. And they wouldn't even have to fork. You don't even have to fork. It's like, you want to create a branch? All right. Could you please still work with us in regards to feature development? That would be awesome. So we're like I said, very open and really drinking our own wine in regards to this so that we can have all of those other entities feel safe, which is what IEEE has done in the past in regards to the standards. They set very clear boundaries. They don't overstep them. You know, they work really hard with the other standards bodies to maintain that kind of relationship. And we'll be doing the same thing going forward.
So we work in an industry where people jump from job to job, and this is a case where I think I see you being there for a long time. And so I'm wondering if really, I mean, you've taken on an enormous responsibility, and it seems extremely consequential to me. So what I'm thinking is as a sort of not quite the wrap question, but as we're getting toward the close here, what are we going to be saying about the IEEE and your work in 3 or 5 years that we're not saying now? Where do we go? What's the, you know, sort of give us a roadmap to, if it's possible.
For the 3 to 5 years is basically, I hope to be the go-to for humanitarian open source and open activities, whether it be open source, open hardware, open data, open science, open EDU, it becomes a go-to place for that. So it won't always necessarily look exactly IEEE. It may be, oh, it's one of the committees, or, oh, it's another standards body that we're working with IEEE on this, or things of that nature, but they will know that there is a standard in regards to how you do this and how to do things openly and fairly for the betterment of humanity.
Wow. That's a big one.
So, isn't it, though? I told you, Doc, you know me.
I know. You're not all here. It's kind of like, this isn't like I got a gig, you know. It's more like you've taken on an enormous responsibility, and I'm confident. I was really excited when I found that you were going there. It's one reason I wanted you on the show. I think it's a huge space to watch, and as you will change it. I hope they know what they're in for, and maybe it's good if they don't. So we generally close with three questions, and the first, of course, is just, is there anything we haven't asked that we should have that you'd like to answer before we go?
How to get involved
before we end. Oh, good. Okay.
Come over to opensource.ieee.org and join one of my advisory groups, especially all my open source people, because I've got the IEEE people coming in with the standards, but I really want to have that yin-yang balance going on. So that's why this was perfect timing for me, because I'm just now getting those started. And the workshops hopefully will be launching soon. And so then we can all get together. In fact, y'all were both already on my invitation list for the workshops, by the way, so that we can have those best practices being created. So that then when we start onboarding all of the IEEE people, it will be where things need to be on the spectrum. So open source people, please come.
Fantastic. That's the name of our show. So hopefully some of our viewers and listeners will take you up on that, opensource.ieee.org. We always ask a question about blockchain, and you just came from that in your lab. Do you have any additional thoughts about that? The rest of us haven't really heard too much about?
Yes, so actually we're having several blockchain standards that are going to be open source coming through. So there's going to be a lot happening on the blockchain world. I'm also, we'll see if I get it through, but some of us are really wanting to have some SSI going on there. No, that's one of your babies there too, Doc. So looking at, you know, in that longer term, obviously I can't do it like next week, but, you know, that's one of the other things that we're looking at in regards to some of those features Simon was asking about. And then what else is happening? Oh, so on the blockchain pieces as well, looking at, I think a lot of the reason some of the standards are interested is because of the fact of getting to the point where we can have the test nets and we can have all of those different things in place for safety issues. And, you know, for a lot of it, it's kind of funny because like some people are like, oh, competing with Hyperledger. And I'm like, no, I'm hoping Hyperledger will be one of the groups supporting these. So I don't view it as being competitive at all. I view it as being compatible. So, yes, on the blockchain.
So, Simon, you had one more question.
Did I? Oh, okay.
That's where you're up.
Yeah, I didn't see the okay up there. Oh, so Salona, yeah. You've mentioned wanting to be humanitarian host for project or host for humanitarian projects. Do you mean that in the sense of answering the debate that's gone on in the open source community about ethical open source, or in some other sense?
I mean, in a much larger sense than that, but I think that that's a piece. And looking at the different codes of conduct, ways that we address things, doing things of that nature, making sure that groups are not locked out. One of the things that I'm working a lot on is role diversity, so that I actually get a lot of the other types of diversity included in open source. One of the things I found at PayPal doing InterSource is once I opened up what it meant to contribute to open source and added in marketing and product management, I got a lot more diversity. And so a lot of that started to happen. In regards to the ethical aspects of that, I don't know the niceties of that piece, Simon, to be able to talk about it very well. I do know that if you go and look at one of the groups that I'll be onboarding pretty quickly is the AI and ethics group that's under SA standards. And so you can go and kind of check out some of the work that they're doing. But I don't know about the ethical use licenses, but I don't think we would ever prevent anyone from using them. That would be very not IEEE-like.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's. I think it's really good to find a set of different answers to the question because I think the need to put a humanitarian emphasis onto open source projects is very real and very relevant. Instant made up solutions that a few folk have come up with aren't necessarily the long term viable answers. And so it would be really good to see someone like IEEE coming up with some long-term viable answers to say, you know, how do we do this stuff, but do it ethically?
Right, right. You know, and it's kind of sad because I watch a lot of open source projects, especially the humanitarian ones. And basically, it seems like if they're not sponsored by like Mozilla or they're part of Benetech, they don't ever go anywhere. I'm sure there's exceptions to that rule. I'm just talking from my own anecdotal pieces that I watch where, you know, I did a lot with Crisis Commons and creative, you know, I did a lot of things on that nature and it was hard to get those things to be on the sustainability level. Like the Google one did well because, well, it was from Google Org. But, you know, how do we do something like that without it being so dependent on a singular entity, a singular corporate entity is important. And I think that's also important to IEEE as well. So how do you do that? And that's one of the things that is very near and dear to all of our hearts right now. And we talk about it very, very often.
So one final question we ask everybody, especially the geeks among us, what are your favorite text editor and scripting language, if you're willing to call favorites?
Gosh, you know... I haven't been doing very much of that lately. You know, I was doing a bunch of JavaScript back then. I did end up doing a little bit of Python and it was really easy. So, and I was able to do some pretty powerful things in regards to client server setups in the massively multiplayer online game world. So I don't know, maybe those two. In regards to the editor, I never got to choose what editor I used. It's always like, okay, now you're using this IDE, now you're using that IDE, okay, whatever. So I don't think I have an actual preference because I just got tossed around from company to company as to which ones I had to use.
So we generally ask, is there anything you want to plug at the end? But I think you actually already have. But you can plug it one more time, and I'll ask Simon if he has anything to plug.
Sure. Come over to opensource.ieee.org. You can sign up an unofficial project. If you want to start an official project, let us know. Email me or get me on Twitter. if you're wanting to do standards, also contact me. And please join our advisory groups because we need experienced, knowledgeable people and heck, if you're watching this show, I'm betting you're pretty knowledgeable to come in and help us create this new world that we're working on.
Yeah. So Simon, how did that go for you? What did you think? You had awesome questions. You really know your stuff, and that really helps.
Well, this is kind of my day job at the moment. There are some things going on there, and I'm hoping that OSI and IEEE SA Open will have a memorandum of understanding at some point. I'm seeing this going on in all the standards groups where I'm engaging at the moment. They're all trying to work out how open source and standards relate to each other. Traditionally, we've kind of thought that open standards and open source are naturally related because they've both got the word open in them. Turns out that's not so much the case. Turns out the big companies involved in standards regard open source as a threat, because when something is open source, it almost certainly can't be monetized using patent royalties. And that's the main revenue stream for a lot of the companies that are involved in standardization. And so there are standards discussions going on in all of the big standards bodies at the moment, trying to work out what their response is going to be. The big standout from this has been OASIS for a long time, which has been was originally XML Open. It's a data formats standards body. And so I'm really pleased to see IEEE taking a piece of thought leadership here, creating a home for projects that are straddling the worlds of software and hardware, but straddling the worlds of standards and open source. And I think it could be hugely influential. I think that if Salona is able to pull off that huge job she's agreed to accept, it could be very consequential to the whole world of open standards, not just because of what happens at IEEE, but because of the precedent that it sets for ISO and for ETSI and for CENELEC and for all of the other de jure standards bodies out there. So, yeah, all great stuff. And not only do I hope it succeeds, but I'm going to go and help OSI to join in and try and make it succeed.
Fantastic. When you said patent royalties, that's a big one, because I think an awful lot of the way the world worked through much of the IEEE's history, but for that matter, the OSI, OASIS, the rest of them, have been around that. And And there are other ways to make money. What open source said from the start is you're not going to make money with this. You're going to make money because of it. And that's a really critical distinction. The more open source that's in the world, the more ways you're going to have to make money that aren't about setting up a toll booth and charging people to cross it.
Right.
There are two totally different mentalities there. And it kind of breaks down to some degree between the telcos of the world and the tech companies, the more modern tech companies of the world, and that's going to be an interesting thing to see, play out, I think.
Yeah. Well, I actually wrote a paper about this for Open Forum Europe last year. Those two worlds you see there are actually the worlds of different sequences of innovation. So in the world that those telcos in and the world hardware manufacturers are in, the way you create a market is by creating a standard. And so they collaborate together over a requirements document. And then the standards body is the venue in which the specification is created. And then the market is created by the standard. And the only way that they can monetize the investment that they make in the standardization phase is by having patents be tolerated within the standard that they can then license and monetize later. Whereas in the world of software, the sequence of innovation is completely different to that. What typically happens is somebody with funding from some other place pioneers the market and creates a market, and the standard arises from the demand in the marketplace for that controlling entity to have their control moderated in some way. And so that's more an implementation-led approach. And that's how I characterize them. One is a requirements-led approach in which patent monetization is tolerated, and the other is an implementation-led approach where patent monetization is actually toxic.
Wow. So this is a topic of infinite dimensions, so we'll have to call it there and just ask it what you've got to plug.
During the discussion with Salona, I mentioned something that we've been working on at OSI for quite a time, well before the current COVID-required cancellation of conferences happened. We felt that we wanted to have a global conference for OSI that didn't involve the environmental impact of people all flying to the same location. And so we came up with this idea of a rolling 48-hour conference that would be physically hosted in certain locations, but would also be video relayed to the other locations. And the conference would simply roll through the time zones with physical presences on a small scale in locations where a lot of people were, and then people able to join in remotely. And we've just announced that conference. It's called the State of the Source Summit. And it's going to be held between September the 9th and September the 11th this year. And the call for papers is open at the moment. So we would very much like to see IEEE and Celona come participate in that conference. And also everybody who's listening to or watching the show today. The URL is opensource.org/stateofthesource, all one word with no punctuation. And it's something that it's also possible for your company to sponsor very inexpensively, to have a local viewing party or even a local stage as part of that global conference.
It's so interesting what's happening with conferences now and how what's going to be virtual and what's not. But that's fantastic. In the meantime, where can people find you? It's going to be in your lower third also, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's in my lower third. Yeah. So I'm Webmink everywhere on Twitter and on GitHub sponsors, where I would love people to sponsor me, and on Patreon, where I would also love people to sponsor me. And then my consultancy also has a website at meshedinsights.com. Where I'm posting about a lot of the topics that I talk about on the show here when I'm on.
Okay, well, so thank you so much. Next week, I have to tell you, next week we have on the open source front, John Mad Dog Hall of many things, and he's going to be fun to have on. So thanks to Celona, thanks to Simon, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, folks, I am Micah Sargent, co-host of Tech News Weekly right here on the TWiT Network. Yes, Tech News Weekly is a show we do every week, Jason Howell and myself, where we talk to people who are making and a breaking the tech news. That's right. It's journalists, it's inventors, it's app makers, it's everybody who's bringing the tech news in a given week. It's all the stuff you want to know about in bite-sized chunks in a fantastic package. So be sure to subscribe. It's twit.tv/TNW.